You are currently navigating a very specific type of domestic chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if you look in your hallway right now, you will likely find crumpled permission slips.
Yeah, or a PE kit that has somehow, fused together into a solid block of polyester.
Exactly. You are exhausted. The finish line of the school year is finally here, and you are just, well, you're running entirely on fumes. But, ironically, according to a massive 10-page document sitting in your inbox right now, your children are operating at peak performance. Welcome to today's deep dive.
And if you are an Ashwell Primary School parent, we are talking directly to you.
Yes, we are. Our mission today is to unpack this staggering July 21st, 2026 Head Teachers Newsletter. And really, we want to answer one central question. How exactly does a school transform exhausted end-of-year kids into engaged, active learners?
It is the ultimate puzzle of primary education, isn't it? Like when you read through this source material, you realize this isn't just a standard wrap-up newsletter listing a few nice
Yeah,
events.
no, it's huge.
It's a highly complex blueprint of cognitive, social, and physical development. So we're going to look under the hood of these activities to help you reflect on the sheer scale of what your children have conquered before this summer break.
Because the mechanics behind it are just fascinating. Okay, let's unpack this before we get into all the, giant carnivorous plants and historic sports victories.
But you're great.
Oh, amazing. But we have to talk about the foundational academics first. Because you can't have the high-level engagement without the core focus, right?
Exactly. You need the baseline.
Right. So the newsletter details some pretty heavy statutory assessments this term. We are talking about the year four multiplication tables check, the year six SATs, and the year one phonics screening.
Yeah, that's a lot for the kids.
Now, let me play the role of the overwhelmed parent for a second here. The phrase statutory assessment for a six-year-old sounds terrifying.
It really does.
Like, how does a school put a year one student through a government-mandated phonics screening without the child just completely melting down from the pressure?
That is the crucial question, and the answer lies in the environment the school has engineered. I mean, high-stakes testing for young children usually backfires if the environment is stressful.
Okay, they just freeze up.
Yeah, exactly. Anxiety literally blocks the cognitive pathways needed for memory retrieval. But what's fascinating here is that the head teacher explicitly noted the considerable confidence of the year ones and the maturity of the year sixes.
Wow, okay.
That confidence is a byproduct of routine and psychological safety. They mask the high-stakes nature of the test by, well, by embedding the skills into their daily low-stress environment.
So it doesn't feel like an exam, it just feels like Tuesday.
Precisely. And we actually have empirical proof that this environment is working via the recent Ofsted inspection.
Oh, right, the Ofsted results.
Yeah, Ashwell received a rating of strong in 5 out of 7 categories, and the inspector specifically highlighted the early years provision, calling it a highly nurturing and effective start.
Which is characterized by a calm and purposeful environment.
Thanks.
Which brings me to the metric that genuinely made my jaw drop. And it wasn't a standardized test score, it was the attendance.
Ah, yes.
Whole school attendance is sitting at an impressive 97.1%.
That's incredibly high.
To put that into perspective, hitting 97.1% attendance is like running a sold-out stadium event every single day for 10 months straight. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident.
It doesn't, and attendance is often referred to by educational psychologists as the canary in the coal mine for school culture. It's a lagging indicator of a child's well-being.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Ofsted report actually explicitly connected this well above average attendance to the fact that leaders and staff greet families daily. They noted that this offers a warm and familiar presence.
Wait, I have to challenge that a little bit.
Okay, go for it.
Surely every school has a teacher standing at the door saying good morning. Is a daily greeting really enough to drive attendance up to 97.1%?
Well, it is not just the act of saying hello, it's the establishment of secure attachment.
Secure attachment.
Right. When a child sees a unified, positive relationship between their parent and their teacher at the point of handover, it signals to their nervous system that this building is a safe extension of their home.
Oh, I see.
Children want to be in the building because their baseline anxiety is neutralized at the literal front door.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And speaking of the environment, Ashwell also won the Hertfordshire Shining Communication Award for 2026 to 2027.
That's a huge deal.
Yeah, for creating a, quote, language-rich environment. Now, I hear that, and it sounds like great educator jargon, but what does a language-rich environment actually look like on a random Wednesday afternoon? Does that just mean the teachers talk a lot?
It's actually the exact opposite. A poorly managed classroom has a teacher talking constantly while the children listen passively.
Right.
A genuinely language-rich environment focuses on scaffolding the child's expressive output.
Meaning getting them to talk.
Yes. It means implementing specific methods like structured peer-to-peer dialogue, open-ended questioning, active listening exercises, things that force the children to articulate complex thoughts.
Wow.
It is about giving a child the linguistic tools to, say, negotiate a conflict on the playground or explain a math problem to a friend.
So it's not about passing a spelling test. It's about giving them the operational code to communicate their internal world. Love that.
Very powerful.
But high attendance and a calm environment aren't just about what happens inside the building. The newsletter goes into heavy detail about what happens when you break the four walls of the classroom. Let's talk about how the school translates this foundational confidence into actual brain development through field trips.
Oh, the field trips are a masterclass in experiential learning. Let's start with Reception Oak class.
Okay.
They went on their very first official off-site trip to Wimpole Hall Farm and Walled Gardens.
Which is a massive logistical undertaking for 4- and 5-year-olds. Just keeping them all facing the same direction on the bus is a victory. But beyond looking at pigs and cows, what is the actual pedagogical value here?
At that age, abstract concepts like life cycles or where food comes from are very difficult for the brain to encode if they are only seen in a picture book.
Right, they need to touch it.
Yes. By going to the farm, seeing the animals, and exploring what plants need to grow in the walled gardens, they are engaging in multisensory learning. They are smelling the earth, hearing the animals, touching the plants.
And that works better.
Much better. Multisensory inputs create much stronger, denser neural pathways than visual input alone.
Okay, so reception is smelling the earth. But then year two takes experiential learning and turns it into a horror movie in the best way possible.
The Venus flytraps.
Yes. They went to the Cambridge University Botanic Garden for a Plants That Bite Back workshop. They are learning about carnivorous plants. And the newsletter notes that they actually got to be eaten by a giant Venus flytrap model.
Which they probably loved.
Oh, I'm sure. But how does getting eaten by a foam plant teach adaptation better than reading a worksheet?
It comes down to emotional tagging.
Emotional tagging.
Yeah. When a child experiences a moment of surprise, excitement, or playful fear, like being enclosed in a giant model of a carnivorous plant, their amygdala is activated.
Oh, the emotion center.
Exactly. The amygdala essentially tags that moment as important, which signals the hippocampus to store the associated information as a long-term memory. Mm. They aren't just memorizing that a plant adapts to nutrient-poor soil by eating bugs. They have viscerally experienced the mechanism of a trap. And that paired perfectly with their amazing adaptations workshop exploring the glasshouses.
That is brilliant. It's weaponizing their sense of play for science. And I see a similar mechanism happening with year three. They had a history off the page day where they completely immersed themselves in the Roman era.
Yes, the Romans.
They dressed up as Romans, visited a marketplace, made trinkets, and marched like soldiers.
Yeah.
Is this just about making history fun, or is there a deeper cognitive reason for the costumes?
What you're looking at there is a prime example of embodied cognition.
Embodied cognition.
Yeah, it's the theory that our motor system and physical actions heavily influence our cognitive processes. When a year three student physically marches in a Roman formation, they're internalizing the concept of historical military discipline through their muscles, not just their eyes.
Oh, that's wild.
They understand the past because they physically inhabited it for a day.
That totally reframes how I view the dress-up days. It's not just a cute photo op, it's a physical learning tool. But let's scale that up to the older kids, where the application of knowledge gets highly sophisticated.
Right, the upper years.
Year five went to the Imperial War Museum, Duxford. But they weren't just passively looking at old airplanes. They took part in a workshop where they became historians and filmmakers.
Creating their own historic documentaries.
Yeah.
And the leap from consuming history to creating a documentary about it requires a high level of executive function. It forces the students to analyze raw information, synthesize a coherent narrative, and then present it creatively.
So they're doing the heavy lifting.
Exactly. They are moving to the very top of Bloom's taxonomy of learning, from simply remembering facts to creating original work based on those facts.
But the activity that I found most fascinating, and maybe it's because I'm a bit of a science nerd, was year six's geography fieldwork at Ashwell Springs.
Oh, that was fantastic.
The newsletter mentions they were testing pH levels and calculating water speed at exactly 0.4 miles per hour. Now, I have to ask, isn't that just a standard nature walk? Like,
Yeah.
why does knowing the water is moving at 0.4 miles per hour matter?
It matters deeply because it bridges the gap between abstract mathematics and tangible physics. Asheville Springs isn't just a local pond. It is a site of special scientific interest.
An SSSI.
Right, known for its rare cold water invertebrates and unique chalk and clay layers. When a student sits in a classroom and calculates speed using a formula on a whiteboard, it means very little.
It's just numbers.
Exactly. But when they stand in a rare ecosystem, drop a float into the water, measure a distance, time it, and calculate that 0.4 miles per hour themselves, mathematics suddenly becomes a tool they possess to decode the physical world around them.
It makes it real.
It shifts their identity from student to scientist.
They are literally turning the neighborhood into an open-air laboratory. And speaking of Year Six, we have to touch on the Isle of Wight residential
It's a
trip.
huge milestone.
They visited Alum Bay, took a boat trip to the Needles, hit the Tapnell Farm Aqua Park for water fights against the staff, went to Black Gang Chine, and even stayed up late to watch the England World Cup match.
Sounds like a great time.
It sounds like an incredible vacation. But as they're about to transition to secondary school, what is the underlying purpose of a trip like this?
Well, a residential trip at the end of primary school is essentially a controlled exposure to independence.
Oh, I see.
For many children, it is their first time managing their own hygiene, their own sleep schedules, and complex peer dynamics without a parent present to mediate.
That's a big deal.
It is, and having a water fight with teachers or staying up to watch a football match breaks down traditional hierarchical barriers. It builds a unique type of resilience and social cohesion that they will desperately need when they enter the much larger, more intimidating environment of secondary school in September.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We've talked a lot about academic and social growth, but this newsletter proves that children have been translating this confidence into massive physical output as well. The sporting achievements this term have been off the charts.
They have been extraordinary. The crowning achievement is the school earning the School Games Mark Gold Award for the 2025-2026 academic year.
Wow.
This is a rigorous external validation of the school's physical education culture.
And from what I read, that gold award isn't just because they have fast runners. A huge portion of the credit goes to Ms. Meehan and the 8-year six sports ambassadors.
Yes.
These year six kids didn't just show up and play. They actually designed, resourced, and delivered a whole sports festival for over 90 children in the early years in Key Stage One.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the actual triumph here isn't athletic, it's cultural.
How so?
By putting year six students in a position where they have to teach a reception child how to throw a beanbag or run a relay, the school is engineering empathy.
Oh, I love
The
that.
older children learn patience, leadership, and responsibility, while the younger children receive mentorship from peers they idolize.
Like win-win.
Exactly. The external assessor specifically praised this pupil leadership because it builds an unbreakable whole school culture of inclusion.
But let's not downplay the fact that they are also incredibly good at traditional athletics.
Fair point.
At the North Hertfordshire District Athletics Competition at Redlands, which is a famously tough event, the boys' team finished third out of 12 schools, and the girls' team finished fourth out of 13.
Fantastic results.
And we have to give a massive shout out to Hugo Lee in year five. He set a new district record in the boys' shot put with a 10.3 meter throw.
That is massive.
I mean, I can barely throw a tennis ball 10 meters. What does a record like that represent at a primary school level?
A 10.3 meter shot put throw for a year five student is a testament to extraordinary biomechanical technique, not just raw power.
Right, it's form.
Yes, it requires a level of coordination, focus, and dedicated coaching that is rare at that age. But what is equally impressive is how the school balances elite traditional athletics with highly novel, inclusive physical experiences.
You mean like the tri-golf enrichment day that they ran in the pouring rain?
Talk about building grit.
Yes. And their introduction of kinball.
Kinball.
Okay, I have to admit, I had to Google kinball. It looks absurd in the best way possible. It's played with these giant, colorful, lightweight balloons
Yeah.
that are almost as big as the kids themselves. How is this a sport?
It is a fascinating, relatively new sport that is practically designed by sociologists.
Really?
Yeah. In traditional sports like football or basketball, one highly skilled star player can completely dominate the game, leaving less confident children on the periphery.
We've all seen that happen.
Kinball makes that impossible. The rules dictate that all four members of a team must be physically touching the giant ball before it can be hit over to another team.
Wait, all four at once?
All four.
So Kinball is essentially a physical manifestation of a group project grade.
Yeah.
If one person checks out or isn't included, the giant balloon hits the floor and everyone loses.
Mm.
You literally cannot have a star player carry the team.
Exactly. It forces constant high-stakes communication. It is a brilliant stealth method for teaching collaboration to children who might otherwise shy away from PE.
That's genius.
And we see that diverse range of talents being nurtured outside of school hours, too.
Oh, absolutely. Like Hector scoring 14 points and providing numerous assists to help the county basketball squad win their tournament.
Incredible.
Or Imogen, India, and Cora in year 5 qualifying for the All England Dance National Finals in jazz and modern dance.
Huge achievement.
And Olwen winning a bronze medal at the Cambridge Chess Mega Final.
It's an ecosystem that celebrates cognitive and physical agility equally.
But if we are talking about sports, I cannot ignore the most highly anticipated event of the year.
Let me guess.
The legendary Year 6 versus Staff basketball match.
Of course.
It was originally rained out in November, and they finally played it this July. The Staff took an early lead. Year 6 battled back. It ended in a tie and went to a next basket wins extra time.
Foul biter.
And Year 6